You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder, hyperactivity disorder, is a neurobehavioral disorder of children and that often persists into adulthood. Now, according to the CDC, approximately 11% of American children between the ages of 4 to 17 years of age, and that actually is counting to about 6.4 million children, they have been diagnosed with ADHD as of 2011. Now, back in 2003, it was about 7.8%. Then it jumped to 9.5% in 2007, and then 11% in 2011. Like, what's going on today? I mean, 2017. I am sure that the rate is over 15%. You know, but how about those thousands of children who are not, who have not been diagnosed yet? Now, today on Wellness for Life, we have best-selling author of Life Will Get Better by Dr. Nicole Birkins. Now, she is a licensed clinical psychologist, a board-certified nutrition specialist, and has been working with children for 20 years, as well as teens and families impacted by ADHD and a whole range of developmental and mental health issues, including autism, anxiety, behavioral disorders, brain injuries. Now, she is here to share her expertise on neurobehavioral disorders and how to help our beloved children feel better. Welcome, Dr. Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Suzanne. It's great to be here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been in practice for 28 years, Dr. Nicole, and no doubt I am seeing more and more young people come in with these behavioral issues, mental health issues, cognitive dysfunction issues. Now, what's going on in this world, Dr. Nicole? What's going on?
Yeah, it's I've seen the same thing in clinical practice over the last 20 years. It's just exploding. And, you know, you talked about the number of kids with just ADHD, 11% of kids, and I'm sure it's much higher now because, as you said, those statistics are from several years ago. You know, we've got 1 in 45 children now with autism spectrum disorder. The rate of kids with allergies and asthma and all of these kinds of issues is just exploding. And, you know, you're probably aware of this, but, you know, the statistics show that approximately half of our kids in this country, over 50%, have some form of chronic illness. And that's continuing to increase. And I think what we're seeing is the impact of the environment around us, the food that we're eating, the fast pace of our lives, you know, all of these kinds of things, the stuff that kids are exposed to in the womb. And then once they're born and throughout their childhood, clearly these kinds of things are having a negative impact on kids' physical health, but also their brain function and their mental health.
Well, you know what? You're a psychologist. So how did you actually start looking at the epigenetics? We're talking about, you know, the lifestyle and nutrition. What made you go there? Because a lot of psychologists, they just do psychotherapy, right? But I'd like to know how you got interested in it.
Yeah, you know, I started out in education and working with kids in schools and then got into psychology. And I had all these great tools in my toolkit for how to work with these kids. But I discovered that, wait a minute, there's something more going on here. These are kids who need more than just some counseling sessions or some school supports. And it really, you know, I had some patients that I started investigating, boy, they have quite a lot of health issues and physical issues and, you know, picky eating and all of these kinds of things going on. And that's really what got me interested in investigating the connection between things like nutrition status, medical problems, physical health issues, you know, those types of things on what was going on with their mental health and their developmental symptoms. And what I found is there's actually a ton of research that supports the connection between those things. And yet most people in my field of psychology and psychiatry aren't talking about or looking at any of those things. And so that's really what spurred me to look more into nutrition and to go and get an additional degree in nutrition and to really focus on that, because I think that's really a missing component of what we're doing treatment-wise for these kids.
Right. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know that when it comes to young children, you know, if you don't work on it early on, then obviously it's going to affect them as adults. And they're saying that, you know, my generation is the last generation where I'm going to be healthier than my parents. Actually, our children are going to be sicker than the parents.
Yes.
Now, that's super sad, isn't it? So
correct.
He says
right.
Whatever it takes. And what I love about your book is that you give solutions. You know, you give solutions. And they're very simple that parents and their loved ones and siblings can do to help each other so they get their life back. But, I, you know, before I do that and go into the solutions that you're going to share, I really want to, you know, talk about this one situation that we deal with as practitioners all the time in our practice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, parents bring their kids in, you know, and I talked about ADHD earlier, but because I treat a lot of ADHD as well, and I see
sure.
them because, you know, I'm a family practitioner, really. I treat all
right.
sorts of children. I could go up to four generations of family, too. And they come in, the parents bring them in because they're concerned about the medication that their child is on.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still not taking them off the medication because they have no way of, you know, helping them. Your book would be perfect for them because specifically you give natural solutions. But you know what? The thing is that the medication, they see that their kid is going through suffering from the medication side effects, the anxiety, insomnia, you know, loss of weight. They don't want to eat anymore. They get aggressive. I mean,
mm-hmm.
all sorts of these symptoms come up. Now, I want to ask you, as a psychologist and practitioner, you must deal with a lot of psychiatrists and other
yes.
Medical doctors. How do you talk about with them, the parents and the medical doctors, about medication and the non-medication treatment options?
Yeah, you know, medication is a huge issue with kids nowadays, and that's something that's changed too, right? I mean, the number of medications that we see children being put on these days, you know, is just astounding. And I really look at it from a root cause type of approach. And what I explain to, you know, parents as well as, you know, medical practitioners is, look, you know, medications at best are a Band-Aid. You know, in the best case scenario, even if, you know, the child is getting some symptom improvement from it, it's a short-term Band-Aid solution. It's not solving the underlying issues. And so that's why, you know, especially in the case of ADHD, for example, the kids stop taking the medication and they go back to having the problem. So I really help parents to think about it from the standpoint of, let's really identify and get to the root of the issue, because just putting a Band-Aid on it doesn't solve it long-term. And as you mentioned, there's many potential side effects, some of them quite serious, from these medications. You know, kids end up with sleep problems, you know, gaining weight or losing weight, increased risk of diabetes, increased irritability and depression, all of these kinds of issues that unfortunately many prescribers in the medical community are not informing parents about the potential for these problems when they're prescribing the medication. And so, you know, I'm sure you see this in your clinic, but we see it here in mine, where parents come and they actually have no idea why their child is getting worse, or, you know, why these new things are happening, because they've not been informed that it could be connected to the medication. So I do a lot of educating of parents about, look, here's, you know, how the medications work and don't work. Here's the potential side effects, and really helping them to understand that they have other options. And I think that is so key, because as you mentioned, most of the time parents don't want their kids on these meds, but they simply don't know what else to do, and they're not being provided with any information about other options. So I really think the education of parents and really helping to empower them to understand what the possibilities are, what the options are, what the risks and the benefits are, I think that's really key.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think that practitioners, we all want to help our patients, whether or not you are in an allopathic field, surgical field, doesn't matter what type of field we're in. We all want to help our patients feel better, but we're limited in the information that we know.
Right.
I want people and our patients to know that we as practitioners are not here just to help you feel better, but we are educators, just like you said.
Yes.
We have to educate them about every aspect. And, you know, the healthcare industry just doesn't allow it. The amount of time a doctor spends with a patient, you know, just in general, regular medical doctor, is like, what? I don't know. They say like 4 to 6 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So how can you educate someone,
right?
You know? They're
right?
just... trained to think quick, think about all of the, you know, the diagnostic rule out all the things that are not the possibility. This may be the possibility. Let me see if I can give you the fix. And it's really sad. It's really sad that our industry is in that way.
I agree. And I think the other issue that I run into with many practitioners is that they really have not been given a lot of information about the research on these medications. You know, I have some wonderful medical doctors and nurse practitioners and, you know, in my community who I work with, and they really are excited to talk to me about what I know about the research on these things because they really aren't aware of it. You know, many of them are not aware that actually the research evidence for psychiatric medications in kids is really quite poor. In fact, very few of the medications that children are put on are approved for use in kids. We don't have any idea about long-term side effects because it just hasn't been studied. And so I find that education piece for parents and also for our colleagues and our professional, community is so important for people to really understand the limits of this approach of using medication, and what the research says about it.
Right. I mean, I'm a big believer that we first do no harm, right? First do no harm.
Absolutely.
So you think all forms of solution. And now let's dive into your book because you give awesome information in your book. Life will get better. And this in your subtitle is Simple Solutions for Parents of Children with Attention, Anxiety, Mood, and Behavior Challenges. So let's go into it. Now you get five real good areas. And I think that's what I read in the book. Thank you again for Nicole for sending that book to me. So appreciate
it. Absolutely.
Yes. And there's five areas. So let's go into each one. We can't dive into it in detail, but I want people out there listening want to know, you know what? These are things that I've got to think about my child. These are things that I've got to think about who I am. And even as an adult, your actual program is excellent for everyone. Doesn't matter what age. So let's go into the number one issue, the number one principle that you think about.
Yeah, so there are five major areas that I look at with kids. And the first one is nutrition. You know, what kids are eating, what they're not eating, what their nutrient levels are like. And, you know, to you or to me, it seems so obvious that what children eat impacts their health. But honestly, that's not something that most people are aware of or learn a lot about. And so it's surprising to a lot of parents to hear me say, boy, I want to look at, you know, for 3 days in a row, I want you to write down what your child is eating so that we can look at that and see what the connection may be to their symptoms. And really just helping parents to understand that the food that kids eat, for any of us, you know, the food any of us eats impacts our mood, impacts our behavior, impacts our ability to focus and pay attention to things. Every single area is impacted by the fuel that we give our bodies, by the food that we're eating. So that first area is really looking at what can be done nutrition-wise. And, you know, in this book, I provide just some very helpful foundational things that parents need to be thinking about. You know, and I know that you focus a lot and have done a lot of work around allergies and those kinds of issues with kids. Well, that's a big issue with nutrition and kids with these kinds of challenges, right? Food allergies,
right,
are a common
food
one. Food sensitivity.
Right.
That's right. Reacting to the things that they're eating. And yeah, go ahead.
So let's just give our listeners let's rattle off some of the foods. Which foods are we talking about? We know sugar, obviously, but what else do you talk about with your patients?
Yeah, so gluten. So, you know, gluten is a big one. Dairy, cow's milk. Dairy is probably one of the biggest ones that I see with kids with behavioral challenges, that dairy is one of the first things that I talk with parents about removing because dairy is just a big one for that.
Preservatives, absolutely. We forget how much food is just loaded with chemicals and junk. But I was just going to say about dairy and gluten. You know, there are these proteins that are, it's called gluteal morphins and casein morphins. They're actually excitotoxins that literally excite the brain. They're neurotoxins that can activate the brain. So if your child is having anxiety at night or having any forms of like insomnia, well, could it possibly be the food that you made the night before that dinner? and they just can't get, you know, they're bouncing off the walls. They can't go to sleep. So many kids don't even get enough sleep, you know. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. And then regarding the chemicals, you mentioned preservatives. Preservatives, are you talking about preservatives like in meat, you know, like in deli meat and things like that? What else are you talking about?
So some of the ingredients, you know, nitrates and nitrites in food, sodium benzoate, you know, some of those kinds of things. Basically, what I teach parents and what I talk about in this book is if you're looking at the ingredients on a packaged food product that you buy your child and you can't pronounce them or you wouldn't cook with them or you don't have any idea what they are, it's probably best to pick something else, right? Because those are chemicals that we know are linked to these kinds of problems in kids. Food dyes in the you know, when we're talking about chemicals, food dyes are another big one. And there's study after study linking the chemical food dyes, you know, the red dye number 5 and the blue dye number 40 and all of those kinds of things that we allow into foods in this country that have been linked to things like hyperactivity and attention problems, mood problems, you know, aggressive behavior. So those are the types of things that I advocate for parents to start reading labels and thinking about and looking at how can I start to take those out of my child's diet? And then how do I start getting better things into my child's diet? You know, and in the book, I provide, you know, some tools and some strategies for helping kids to get more produce, more fruits and vegetables into their diet, drinking more water, getting rid of the soda pops that have all of those chemicals and, you know, sugars and artificial sweeteners, you know, even juices. You know, parents often think that juice is a great option for kids, but it's full of sugar and can be full of chemicals too. So looking at how to transition kids over to drinking water, which is a much better brain supportive choice for them. So, you know, it's about looking at some things to remove and then also helping parents to figure out how to put good quality food back in their child's diet.
All of that are great, excellent tips here. So let's go into your second key area to help your children start feeling better all naturally. You mentioned it was sleep, right?
Absolutely.
You know, kids don't sleep very well these days. So let's talk about that.
Well, it's interesting because sleep is so key to brain function. We kind of know that as adults, right? Like if you think about the last time you didn't have a very good night's sleep and you probably weren't super, you know, positive and productive the next day, right? So we know for ourselves how important sleep is. And what's interesting is that getting enough and getting good quality sleep is even more important for children. Because of the rate at which their brains are growing and developing, they actually require not only more sleep, but they also have more problems if they're not getting the right kind of sleep as compared to adults. So sleep is so critical. You know, it's very interesting. There are studies that show that somewhere between 25 and 40% of kids diagnosed with ADHD, they don't actually have ADHD. They have an undiagnosed sleep problem that's been untreated. And when you treat the sleep issues for those kids, their ADHD symptoms go away. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Problem is that, you know what, parents can't tell if their kid is sleeping or not very well, or not sleeping well, because they're asleep themselves, right?
Right.
So
right.
You know, I recommend my patients to use sleep trackers. You know, I don't know if you use them yourself, but I have one called, it's a Hilo band, and you can get it at HiloStar.com. And it's an actual band that tracks sleep. And whether you've got REM sleep, deep sleep, light sleep, or it'll even show how, you know, when, if you're awake in the middle of the night. And again, having something that you can track your child with would be an excellent way so that you can say, you know what, something's up. Let me take them to our practitioner and see what can we do about this.
Yeah, sleep trackers can be great. You know, I often also ask, you know, is the child getting up a lot in the night? Restlessness is an easy thing for parents to know. You know, is the kid kind of banging into the walls all night, or they go into their child's room in the morning and the covers are, you know, all over the bed and the kid's in all different positions in the bed? You know, you're looking at those kinds of factors to see, boy, is the kid really restless during their sleep? And also, does the child have a difficult time settling down and falling asleep? You know, it's not unusual for parents to say to me, boy, you know, I've got to lie in bed with my child for an hour, 2, 3 hours, you know, before they can fall asleep. So, it's important for people to understand that when children aren't getting enough hours of sleep or they're not getting good quality restful sleep, that has a huge impact on their behavior and their mood and their ability to focus in the classroom. So sleep is a key component of improving those things. So in the book, I give parents some really core strategies for, number one, how to identify if your child's having sleep problems, and then also how to resolve those things. There are some supplements nutritionally that can be very helpful, things like magnesium. Sometimes melatonin is appropriate. There's some herbal formulations that I talk about in the book that can help with that. And also environmental strategies. You know, a big issue with sleep nowadays is the amount of time that kids are spending in front of screens and electronics. And we know the blue light from those seriously impacts the ability to fall asleep. And so, you know, kids who are having a screen right in front of their face up until bedtime, they're going to struggle with sleep. So I give parents strategies for how to set up the environment in a way that's conducive to sleep, how to manage the issue of electronics, you know, how to deal with a child who's, you know, maybe waking up and having some anxieties in the night, those kinds of things, because it's so important for kids to be able to get enough sleep and get good quality sleep.
I think that's excellent. Those are excellent. And I know that there's so much more that you have in your book, Life Will Get Better. So I really want people to take a look at that. And let's go into, we got what, three more areas?
Yeah, just really briefly, movement's another one. You know, kids these days are not moving enough physically. They're spending a lot of time being sedentary at desks in school, and then a lot of time with electronics and other kinds of things that just are not moving their bodies. Now, most people think about movement from the standpoint of physical health, right? And they think about, oh, it's important to move and get exercise so that we don't have obesity and those types of things. And that's important, but a lot of people don't recognize that for children, movement, physically moving their bodies, is critical for brain development. It's part of how our brains develop the ability to focus, to be able to manage the kinds of things that we have to, you know, take care of during the day, to be able to regulate our emotions. Things like handwriting and reading and all of those kinds of academic skills, movement is key for children's brains to develop those abilities. So we need to get our kids up and moving, you know, and I'm not advocating for parents to take away all electronic devices, but I am helping parents to think about how much time kids are spending with those kinds of sedentary activities versus how much time they're spending being active. So, you know, if kids are going to spend time sitting on the couch playing with electronics, they should spend at least an equal amount of time playing outside, riding a bike, doing an obstacle course in the basement, whatever it's going to be, but they need to be up and they need to be moving. And that's a critical thing for brain development too.
I remember my son is not 22, he's out of college. But I remember, you know, we only had one child, Cody, and I was basically his playmate. I didn't let him actually be on the computer at all. Any of those little iPads at all. I went playing basketball. I would go out bike riding. I would go to the playground and literally climb the monkey bars with him. I mean, I was very active. In fact, I was probably more active then than I can tell you I am today, because I had to do it for my own son so he could be as active. And the neurological aspect is so important, what you're saying. The connection of movement and the feedback going to the brain, and that's how you literally develop neural pathways, strengthen those neural pathways.
Yeah. It's exactly excellent. Right. And I think a specific diagnosis to mention here, because some of your listeners probably have this with their kids, is sensory processing disorder. That's kind of become a big label and diagnosis. And it's important for parents to know that movement and physical activity is so key and connected to building those connections for sensory processing. So when you said brain connections, it just made me think of that, because I'm sure some of your listeners are dealing with that with their kids.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we only got about 5 minutes left. How about giving us the last two?
Yeah. So the last two are connection and cognition. And this really has to do with relationships. So the connection component in the book, I talk about key strategies that parents can use to communicate more effectively with their children, to set limits and be supportive, but also manage behavioral challenges and issues that can come up. Because, you know, when our kids are born, they don't come with instruction manuals, right? So we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants trying to figure this stuff out. And so what I really tried to do was provide parents with some simple but effective guidelines for communication, behavior management, those types of things, and really building a quality relationship, because that's so important for helping kids to overcome these kinds of challenges. And then the last area is cognition, and this has to do with problem solving. One of the big issues that we see with kids today is that they have very low frustration tolerance, and they don't know how to solve little or big problems and things that come up, you know, in their lives. They fall apart easily, especially kids with, you know, ADHD, autism, these types of things. So I provide very simple key strategies that parents can use throughout the day to help kids be able to develop those problem-solving skills so they can handle the kinds of things that come up at school, at home, with friends, those kinds of things. So really, it's those five core areas. And
I'm so happy that you gave into that. But I'll tell you, there's so much more in the book, so much more. And I really suggest everyone to go out there and get her book. Now, your book is available on your website, drberkins.com, right?
Yep. Yep. They can go to lifewillgetbetterbook.com. Yeah.
Awesome. Lifewillgetbetterbook.com. Dr. Berkins is spelled DrBerkens.com. Thank you so much. I loved having you here, Dr. Nicole. Now, great information. Until next time, go out there and have a blast. Live your best life of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate wellness today. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural health strategies here on Wellness for Life, right here on Radio MD. Stay well.